Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. Celeste Headlee is away for a few days, and we're considering here at the beginning of the program the life and death of Elizabeth Edwards. Estranged wife of Senator John Edwards, Elizabeth died yesterday from breast cancer at the age of 61. She was the author of two books, Resilience and Saving Graces. She was a student of literature and politics. She was a lawyer, a very public figure, surrounded herself with family and friends in the last week of her life in North Carolina. Andrea Peirce was one of those friends. She's a former campaign aide and was with Edwards and by near to the family in the last days of Elizabeth Edwards. Andrea, good morning.
Thank you for having me.
You know, someone on the program earlier this morning alluded to the idea that family was deeply important to Elizabeth Edwards, and that the themes of tragedy in the family that go back to the death of her son were very much alive throughout the tragedies that were played out very, very publicly and at the end. Did you find that to be the case?
Elizabeth was an amazing mother. And I think one thing that really struck me, I got to talk to her the other day before things went further downhill a bit. And I asked her how the kids were doing with, you know, the news that she was not doing so well. And she said, they're doing surprisingly so well. I just can't believe it. And I said, well, their mom did write the book on resilience, and they had learned something from it. And, you know, they had just seen her go through some of the hardest things you can expect and on such a public stage. And she dealt with them with such grace that I think that they just, you know, they own her grace and they own her, the best of her. So it's really wonderful.
You know, it's hard sometimes to understand how someone with a very public face who, and I guess the Kennedys are a great example of this, who keep it all together when the world is watching. But you just have to imagine that there's got to be enormous pain and a different face behind the scenes. How different was the public face from the face that you saw in Elizabeth Edwards?
You know, I was actually talking with several people yesterday, and I can't remember Elizabeth really complaining. She just wasn't in her DNA. It's just not who she is. And there was never any why me about it. I think, you know, she would jokingly, I know one of the other staff, you know, she would call Elizabeth and talk to her about things because they were friends as well. And, you know, she would complain about her problems, and Elizabeth would laugh and say, do you want to trade? But I think that that was the most you could ever get from Elizabeth in terms of feeling sorry for herself. She just wasn't her.
Finally, Andrea Peirce, former campaign aide and friend of Elizabeth Edwards, do you think women around the country shrink from the sense of pain and, I think it's fair to say, a sense of a certain amount of victimhood on the part of Elizabeth Edwards' life, or do they connect with it, woman to woman?
Oh, there's no question. If anybody who went to an event with Elizabeth, she connected with everybody who was around her, and people just felt her strength and really, I mean, there was not a person who met Elizabeth that didn't connect with her in some way. And so I think that her strength and her presence really just shone through all the time. And that's a great legacy to have.
Well, indeed. It's certainly a personal legacy of yours as a friend of Elizabeth Edwards. Andrea Peirce, thanks so much for taking time out this morning to be with us.
Thank you so much for letting me to speak about her.
Sure. Andrea Peirce, a former campaign aide and friend of Elizabeth Edwards. Joining us now, a friend of The Takeaway and contributing editor at The Daily Beast, author of Passages in Caregiving, Turning Chaos into Confidence, and Hillary's Choice, among many other books. Gail Sheehy joins us. Good morning, Gail.
Hello, John.
So, you know, there's a symbol here. Elizabeth Edwards, her life, you know, embodies tragedies, any one of which couples might, you know, be devastated by. She had them all together. As a power couple, as a Washington couple, what do you think Elizabeth Edwards' life symbolizes here?
Well, she certainly was a model of tenacity in fighting both for her life and her marriage and their public ambitions. But I can't help thinking of the what-ifs. I've had experience with a husband with cancer, and I know it often goes into remission when the patient has a something new or new dream to live for, because the boost to the spirit gives a boost to the immune system. Hmm. And I wonder what might Elizabeth Edwards' bonus years have been like if she had cut out the other cancer in her life, you know, a treacherous husband who continued to betray her. And, you know, what further pain must have depressed her system when she partnered with him in a lie in 2007 when the couple stood together, apparently in loving mutual support, to tell the country that her breast cancer had returned and couldn't be cured. And she knew then, we didn't, but she knew then that her husband had betrayed
right.
her.
You know, where do we stand as a society? I mean, 50 years ago, maybe you could easily and simply say, stand by your man. Nowadays, there are very different camps here. There are throw the bum out, get away as fast as you can, don't waste your life. And then there are others who still do admire this tenacity.
That's certainly true. But I think, you know, we always think about the children because they're the most important victims in a divorce situation. Is it possible that her life and her children's lives suffered all the more in these last few years? You know, poisoned by what John Edwards did and the tawdry melodrama he brought down on them that was dragged out in the media by all his denials. And what if she had separated from him at the point when she knew he was lying? And the children would have still seen him.
Right.
And instead, when he was, you know, spurned at the polls at the primaries by his failed second presidential run, Elizabeth became quite isolated. And that's another blow to someone battling incurable illness.
You know, I see this as the combination of the Betty Ford story and the Hillary Clinton story, in a sense, with very different men.
Well, yeah, Hillary Clinton did pull it off, but you know, I think in the case of, she didn't have breast cancer.
Right.
That's
right.
My take here. And
sure.
I think when Elizabeth was told it was incurable, you know, the easiest thing to do is to say yes for treatment after treatment, but no matter what the pain and strain on herself and the family. And the bravest thing, I believe, is to ask yourself, what's the most important thing for me to do with this stage of my life? How can I squeeze as much enjoyment and meaning out of every day as long as I have? And she might have sought palliative care. Patients in palliative care have a better quality of life and fewer depressive symptoms than seriously ill patients who keep receiving
right.
acute care.
Well, she certainly had, at least in the end, the words expressed in her own way. I think she was able to design her legacy with the sad circumstances better than most, given
Absolutely.
All the circumstances.
And she wrote wonderful dying letters
Indeed.
To her children.
Gail Shee, contributing editor of The Daily Beast, thanks so much. Remembering Elizabeth Edwards, who died at age 61 yesterday.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.